Cyprien Gaillard è il giovane artista francese invitato da Lorenzo Fusi a realizzare una mostra personale per SMS Contemporanea a Siena. Lo abbiamo incontrato e insieme si è parlato della sua mostra al Santa Maria della Scala, ma soprattutto si è parlato di nostalgia, entropia e architettura, tutti elementi al centro del lavoro di Gaillard. L'intervista è in inglese.
Right, my name is Cyprien Gaillard and I was born 2nd of August 1980. I only went to school for 1 year. The show is pretty much, I would say, a survey of the work I've been doing in the past 2 years or so. It's mostly a photography and video show, which is quite new for me because I've been working in different mediums, such as paintings and sculptures. And the show is really kind of a response to Lorenzo's invitation of showing here as a... I mean, in this space, and the idea of what is this museum, also the idea is kind of also constantly the question of renovation is always very, very important. Preservation, you can't hang anything on the walls, and I quite like the challenge, and I think it's quite successful. I mean, I'm happy with it in the end. In the end, I think that all my work, all the recent works and all the works I'll be doing, like the next year maybe or so, is all a way that I try as an individual to fight nostalgia every day. My way of dealing with it is to kind of consider things as they are now, you know, and kind of find it beautiful. A perfect example here would be to look at the tunnel outside. When I first saw it, I remember thinking, oh my God, how would it possible to do it? The circle on the duomo on the outside, you know, have you seen them? You know what I mean? This kind of like crop circle, there's the center. There's some glass and steel. This structure, this circle, there used to be a window, you know, and now it's been renovated in this perfect circle with these glass windows that remind me of office buildings that are like mirror glasses, you know. But anyway, I found it incredibly, incredibly strange that they accepted to add this very modern element to this to the cathedral, and then I find it extremely beautiful and most of all very anachronic, and I really like this idea of anachronism as a way to fight nostalgia, because I would be sitting outside, you know, and I would see all these people, these tourists visiting Duomo, and I would think, well, maybe not here, but visiting other monuments, I would see, you know, tourists, like a big Americans with New Balance, 60 years old, walking the pyramids. And I remember thinking, like, how did our civilization become so ugly? And then we built these things that are so beautiful before. But then I look up and then I see the structure and the Duomo that is like brand new and is extremely beautiful to me. It's just as beautiful as the whole structure and actually makes it stand out, you know. I was in Egypt a month ago. I was visiting Gizeh, the pyramids. It was the same thing, about 1,000 tourists in front, and everyone was there with their brand new buses and stuff. But I was kind of like feeling a bit sad and romantic about, very nostalgic in fact. And at the corner of the pyramid, I find these structures that were these big kind of light bulbs that were like big perfect circles of red, green, blue, and purple. They were completely abstract, and in fact that were used to light the pyramids at night for tourists, for sound and lightning, you know. So these structures had been added two, three years before, when Egypt had a little bit of money to invest, because so many people were visiting Gizeh that they had to provide other opening hours at night, so they started lighting them at night, you know. And so they added these structures at the bottom of the tower. They're just so beautiful. There's just these perfect circles of colors. And I remember also thinking that our civilization is just as amazing when I look at these things that are at the bottom, you know. It's just that we don't know it. And I think that's a very important thing for me. It's not to be nostalgic.
Like an eagle crossing the sun. underground, you fool.
No, I don't want to be the romantic artist that looks at all the building phone and say, oh, how sad it is. You know, I try as much as I can to kind of interact with it, kind of, you know, I'd much rather be the artist that kind of saves a building or that demolishes it than the one who just stands in the landscape like the guy in the David Caspar Friedrich painting, you know, just like looking at the beauty of the landscape. Yeah. And consider myself as a romantic. Romanticism only comes as a kind of failure to save some things, you know what I mean? And nostalgia only comes in a way, for example, the demolition of the buildings, I'm not nostalgic of the building that fell, you know? But my way of dealing with it is just to take the picture of what happens right after. Or maybe to move some rubble, to process it, to make a monument. But what I'm a little bit worried of is that if everything is demolished, then you know, how will it be felt in the next future generations of things? Like how will it be, you know, a recent history has been completely erased, and this is a little bit kind of scares me a little. But I don't want to be the nostalgic one. At some point, I remember thinking that I spent this whole year traveling constantly, like almost constantly, visiting as many sites as I could. And I remember thinking at some point that all these structures are ruins. Everything is ruined. You know, like forget about if it was built in modernism eras or before. Everything is ruined. You know, Chernobyl is a ruin, and Egypt is a ruin, and the Greek ruin, you know, and Rome and Pompeii and Chernobyl. I was in Chernobyl, visiting Chernobyl last Sunday, you know, I just came back from Ukraine. And to me, all is ruined. All these places are ruined, you know. What is the difference between Pompeii and Pripyat, which is the city that was next to the Chernobyl reactor? There were 60,000 people. And now, just like Pompeii, it's just been abandoned. And there's no one living there but frozen, just like Pompeii, because people left like this in one day because the reactor exploded and never came back. So you have a city of 60,000 people, and you walk down the street, you climb up buildings, you go to cinemas, you go to shopping malls, you go to schools, you go to swimming pools, and everything is there in its perfect shape, you know. And it was Ukrainian tour operator, a tour giving to tourists, you know, in Ukraine. And I went with my friend, and I remember thinking again, like, there's no more difference between these things. The only problem is that there's one that is like considered as such a too recent history, and I actually think that my tour in Chernobyl was much more interesting than what I saw in Pompeii. Pompeii was actually extremely boring compared to what I saw there, you know? And I remember thinking that this was a new form of tourism that is, and that very few people could come back of this experience or saying like it wasn't interesting. Come back to this idea to me, if we consider everything as ruins, if you, for example, a building, I will never consider a building with people living inside as a ruin. This is, I think, extremely disrespectful for the people there. I'm just considering the point where a building is about to be demolished, so people are evicted, and sometimes there's maybe 6 months or 1 year before it's actually demolished. During this time, people work to take the windows and the elevators out, and in the end, they finished to demolish it. But during that period of time, during 1 year, this building is empty and exists as just a ruin. It's just the same as anything. It's out of its social context, out of economic problems. It just belongs to the landscape. There's no more history of modernism or anything. So I really remember thinking, well, why don't we keep some of them? What is demolition? It costs 2.5 million euros, sometimes 3 million euros. Don't have an idea. It costs more to demolish than to build, you know. And also, everyone is kind of drilling my head with ecological consciousness, and it's the same people that demolish things and stuff. So, I just, this absurdity of bureaucracy is kind of crazy, and all. And I just, if you consider everything as ruined, for me, there's two groups now. There's just legal ruins, official ruins, and illegal ruins. And then illegal ruins is these buildings that we refuse to conserve. That, you know, what would be the difference? We build a park around this building, you know, whatever, if it has to be Corvial in Rome or Via di Scampia in Naples, if it has to be, why can't we just keep it as a kind of ruin and make it a park? Or it would be much cheaper, much more interesting to visit, you know, and I actually think that people would come. This is an idea that I had in France. It's actually my dream work, the work of my life, was to be to, you know, in the 80s, there was a group of people who bought different castles in France, Americans, and they bought the castles, and then they demolished the castle rock by rock and moved it on a boat, and they rebuilt them in America, you know. But also in Rome, you know, temples have been dismantled to build a church, you know. So I had this idea that if the building is being demolished, you know, I could buy a piece of land in France and move all the buildings that will be demolished into one big park, you know, and it would become this kind of a capriccioso, you know, like Piranesi, where you have all the monuments reunited in one picture, you know, and so you'd have buildings from France and then from Italy and then from Scotland, and it'll all be there, and then just little trails to go, you know, and then lakes and stuff. So it would become this new idea of what is a park also. Like, all these things really interest me, but this would be also a kind of key to fight nostalgia, I guess. So. Yeah, I face them every time I go there, yeah. Or, you know, for example, it was demolition of one of these buildings, the one upstairs, actually, the one with the graves in front in Glasgow, you know. And I decided I want to make a sculpture at the Heywood Gallery, which is a museum in London, which is one of the most prestigious museums in England, made out of the rubbles of this demolition. So what we did is we got a few trucks, to move all the concrete from Glasgow to London, and I built with this concrete what I call a cenotaph, which is basically a grave for a monument to a dead building. You know, and I think the people that were there, especially people from GHAs, Glasgow Housing Association, people kind of deal with the demolition, and I was very concerned about how people react to that. Were very touched by it, but. The whole social aspect of this place is extremely interesting, I think, but I don't want to encounter it, you know. I don't want to be an artist who makes a commentary about people living there, because I don't live there, and my work is not about so much like a place or a kind of community or something, but it's much more about, I think, linking, you know, different geographical sites, you know, together, mapping kind of the world and kind of seeing that something that happens here also happens there, and why do we preserve this? What, you know what I mean? But you see, in my films, you would have like a classical castle, you know, and then picture it in my film, then you would have tower blocks, you know, and then now I'm interested in bunkers, Second World War bunkers. It's not so much about social utopia or these places. The problem is that everyone here in Europe critics these housing estates, you know, that mean of concrete. But if you go to Los Angeles, where people die fucking every day shooting, is everyone lives in a small house with a garden. You know? Watts or Compton, or all these neighborhoods in LA, or even in Baltimore, even in Detroit, to all these places. Because I was crossing America, and you have like. The East Coast and the West Coast is like the facade, you know, of renovation. It's like so slick, and then in the middle is all the ruins. It's completely crazy. But all these cities, all people live in small houses, you know, and houses. Everyone lives in houses. So the question of these modernist buildings being a ghetto or not, for me, is completely absurd. It's not even a question. Or architecture as a way to solve things, you know. I don't even ask myself these questions, because I think they are. And my work isn't, first of all, not about the architecture so much in the end, but more kind of the decay of it, or how it is now again, how it belongs more to a landscape. Just generally, what is a landscape? What is an interesting landscape today? What is worth visiting? Rather than questioning the architecture as a problem solver. Well, you know what I mean? It's a kind of, it's just two big questions. I leave this to the architects, you know what I mean? The problem is that I think architecture today is absolute shit. I don't see anything that I like. And this really also depresses me and kind of tends to me to be nostalgic, you know? New office buildings and glass and steel structures and mirrors and... But just generally, to finish with the idea of renovation, I find it very hypocrite, the idea of demolishing a building, of refusing the idea that... just the general idea of entropy that has been developed by Smith and Davis, that I really believe in, that I really believe now living in chaotic times. And I just think that you have such a gap between a world that's becoming more chaotic and then human beings that are trying to fix things as much as they can. You know, I think that if we could accept just a little bit of these things that we built that we all find so ugly and we can like start living with it, you know, things would be much more easier. But if we kind of like... We say, oh, chaos is not here, like, we're going to keep, like, fixing things, and then it will be much worse at some point. I don't really like this hypocrisy of, like, not being able to kind of deal with our own mistakes, you know, kind of, like, demolishing things or, you know, because the mayor is only dealing with the mistake of another mayor, you know what I mean? Of a prior mandate of someone who built something in the 60s, something he built in the 70s, and now he's... faced with something that is falling apart, what do we do, you know? And in the end, I think that's like, that's what makes in the end these buildings that are incredibly monumental, human after all. You understand? The idea that it's a mistake, a human mistake, and then we should kind of keep it as a monument to mistakes or something, you know? I think is that we have a strong tradition of rioting, of revolution in France. And I think I was always kind of influenced by this. Even as a kid, like looking at you know, paintings of revolution, war paintings. And I think the opening scene of this Disneyland Ski Rayon is really this. You know, the idea it's a fight between two groups of hooligans, but to me it's just a battle painting. I'm not filming the face of someone bleeding on the floor, but I'm just... way far filming something that is much broader with buildings in the back and nature and the bridge, you know, and the fact that they, you know, it's all coming together, the idea that the future, we have to forget about the idea that of a future that will be more modern and slick. I think the future will be more chaotic and more medieval and more obscure and more kind of Mad Max and less Fifth Element, you know, as a kind of one, like me to talk about film. And I really love it. I really enjoy the idea that we're going to something more chaotic, and I think there's a lot of beauty also in this chaos. But if we stop continuing to think that of progress in general and stuff, and you know. But and then you have revolution, and it's me linking the French Revolution also with the recent riots, you know, in France, and it was exactly the same. You know, I remember looking at TV and television, and then it would be police arriving, like a Roman formation with some shields like this, you know. And like this, like a group of 15, walking towards not a castle this time, but a big tower block, you know, and trying to open the door with a bélier, like in medieval times. And then you will have on this concrete building, on this facade, you have these windows that are so narrowly designed by this stupid architect from the 60s that it looks like these small windows to throw arches from the medieval times. And then you will have people from all the windows throwing boiling water, rocks, TVs, washing machine, whatever they can on the police downstairs, you know? And I say, I really thought again that this is proof that we're going into this kind of dark ages, but I just decided to look at it as a modern kind of battle, you know? Rather than just saying, oh, it's so depressing and the suburbs are burning and stuff. I find it quite nice that youth can still organize and riot, you know. I tell you the truth about this film, how it's drawn. It's a mix of things that I've recuperated and things that I've shot myself. So the hooligan fight. basically I got a tape, a DVD, with about 6 hours of fight. It's a classical thing with legends in Russia and in Eastern Europe. They're very organized, they have like websites and stuff, and then they have a meeting point, and then they say bring 15 people, they bring 15 people, and then they fight against each other. Or two people against two, or something like that. And then they edit these movies, these tapes, that are kind of this, their pride, right? They kind of pride, this DVD of like a record of all their fights, you know, 6 or 7 hours of fights. And so I used this footage filmed by the hooligans themselves. I edited it, of course, in many different bits to kind of assemble it. And then there is the major part of the film, which is the demolition of this building. That is a tape that I've been looking for about 2 years before I found it. I was witnessing a lot of demolitions. And then at some point I met this kid who told me that when he was 8 years old, he remembers a building falling in at night. And ever since then, I tried to look on the internet, find a way for this tape, and it was absolutely nowhere. And the reason why this tape wasn't there is because there was no reason to demolish this building, no technical reason, architectural reason. The only problem was too much crime in it, too much concentration of different communities of people from all around the world, too much crime. So the city of Meaux in France decided to demolish it, but in order to make the people a little bit more happy about the demolition, they decided we're going to make you a big show at night. And I went finally in the mayor's office and I asked for the tape. I finally got the footage, and it was VHS, and it's been completely destroyed. I spent like 2 months renovating image by image all the shots. And then I reappropriated this image that is exactly what I was saying about the anti-revolutionary system, where the state demolishes the buildings of the people and not the other way around. And I turned it into the other way. Now then this film becomes kind of revolutionary. We look at this. This is what I wanted with his music also, to turn the situation around, to be us who demolished everything, you know? And so for me, it's very important also that it's, I always think when I make a work, you know, first of all, I don't have a studio. I always spend most of my time outside, you know, and I always consider what is worth doing, you know, and I always try to kind of, my gesture has to be the most humble, simple, as comparison to reality, it's just completely fascinating, you know. I would be silly to kind of spend a whole month infiltrating the hooligans of Kyiv, you know, and then to make something that it becomes, you know, a kind of social reality thing. I'm really not interested in this, you know. But the last part of the film, which is a helicopter shot, which is the most produced, the more spectacular, if you want. Yes, I shot it because it wasn't there, and then it was in no man's land, and no one ever filmed this place. So I decided, let's go, let's shoot this film. So it's, for me, appropriation is also kind of, it's not a question anymore. It's kind of, but none of these tapes were found on the internet or anything. It's footage that I found on the site, you know. And I'd much rather use things that are there than, you know, than to create a new image or something, you know. Even my films are always kind of like one shot of a place that is always important for me. Just a simple shot and then smoke. And then, you know, for me, it's very important to be, that my work is kind of readable, it's kind of simple. It's very important for me that it never tends to be too conceptual. But I don't want it to be pop as well, or I don't want it to be kind of, maybe punk or something like this. So his name is Kudlam, and we've been collaborating for a few years. I think we have this kind of same ideas that we share about work or music has to be a little bit glorious, but we don't know to what kind of glory, but we just want to be glorious, just maybe to kind of failure. So for me, his music is really kind of like an anthem, or a kind of music that works as federating something, you know. I think humor in the end, in this case, was like such an important key also to kind of fight nostalgia and stuff, you know. And so we've been like kind of working together and things, and it actually made lots of fun together.
Le musiche che accompagnano questa intervista sono di Kudlam, musicista e compositore che collabora regolarmente con Gayar. Più informazioni sulla sua musica al sito www.koudlam.com. Radio Papesse è un progetto di Carola Haupt, Ilaria Gadens e Cristiano Magi.